Tested is sponsored by Duke Health, home of the Pandemic Response Network, helping communities stay safe and connected during the COVID-19 pandemic by partnering with local school, business, and faith-based organizations to launch COVID-19 symptom support programs in their own communities. Learn more at pandemicresponsenetwork.org. We're also supported by Hungry Harvest, delivering farm-fresh produce and kitchen staples to your door starting at $15. Every delivery fights food waste and supports local hunger-solving organizations. HungryHarvest.net.
I would not dare walk on this campus and expose these young people to me not having that vaccine. So I'm the poster child for that.
I'm Leonida Inge. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, saying goodbye to one college president and hello to another. By now, we know COVID-19 has no boundaries. This deadly virus has taken the lives of more than 500,000 Americans and millions worldwide. In North Carolina, more than 12,000 people have died this past year during the pandemic. Today, we remember one life lost to COVID, just as a new chapter was beginning.
Dr. McVail is free right now!
Irving Presley McVail was on the quaint Raleigh campus of St. Augustine's University for only a few months as president when he succumbed to COVID-19. The historically black university celebrated its leader as if he had been there decades. St. Augustine's was where the 71-year-old McVail was expected to wrap up a stellar career in higher education. He was the founding chancellor of the Community College of Baltimore County and had served as president of two other schools. While colleges and universities across the country grappled last year with whether to allow students back on campus or not, McVail chose to open. This virtual message welcomed new students and freshmen at the start of the fall semester.
New Falcons, my name is Dr. Irving Presley McVail, and as the president of the university, it is my pleasure to welcome you to St. Augustine's, affectionately known as St. Aug. As you begin your educational journey, Blue and White Week of Welcome.
But after the greetings and pleasantries, McVail wrapped up his message with an acknowledgement of the challenging times we're living in.
In this new normal, I encourage you to make judicious decisions and commit yourself to the Safe Falcons Pledge, which reinforces the importance of wearing masks, hand sanitizing, and social distancing. We wish you the very best in the fulfillment of your personal academic goals. I also hope that you will be sustained.
Shortly after the start of the semester, McVail reported early symptoms of COVID-19, a headache and a fever. He had met in person with his new staff at the university. One staff member reportedly also had COVID, but recovered and returned to work. McVail's illness was swift. He died 2 weeks after becoming sick, hospitalized, and placed on a ventilator. Aaliyah Williams is the Student Government Association president at St. Augustine's. She remembers her short time with McVail fondly.
Being that I am SGA president, I did work with him very closely. He was like another, I would say, father figure to me. He definitely taught me the ins and, like, not all the ins and outs because he didn't have much time, but he taught me a lot of ins and outs about basically making sure things in-house are perfect before things go out basically out of the house. Mm-hmm. But yes, basically another, like I said, family. He just taught me how to love and express the love, and being that I am a student leader and he was a leader as well, just basically spreading love as a leader, whether it had to be harsh or, you know, nicely.
Okay. St. Augustine's University has moved quickly to rebound after the sudden death of Irving McPhail. The school has already selected a new president, someone their former leader would certainly approve of. Before we meet the new boss on campus, I want to share just a little more background on St. Aug. It's one of the nation's 101 HBCUs. The small private institution was founded in 1867 by the Episcopal Church to educate freed slaves. What a history. But recently, some smaller private HBCUs like St. Aug have struggled to stay financially afloat. But in a year of unprecedented sorrow, these Black institutions have experienced some advantages.
I don't know if benefit is the right word to use because so much has been lost, so many people have died, and it's been, you know, a tragedy like none other. But it has given HBCUs a moment to kind of show their worth for anyone who had doubts.
Delee Smith Barrow is an education editor with Politico and has reported on HBCUs during the pandemic.
Generally, HBCUs do not have large endowments. They are often underfunded institutions. About half of HBCUs are public, so they are constantly asking their state senators and asking Congress for more money since they're public institutions. So in that sense, they're not too much different from predominantly white institutions. On the other hand, in this last year, I will say that HBCUs are strong in terms of fundraising. We've seen a lot of people donate to HBCUs. Mackenzie Scott, the ex-wife of Jeff Bezos, she donated a little more than $500 million to HBCUs in this past year. Recently, Morgan State University in Baltimore City got a $20 million donation. The CEO of Netflix, I want to say he donated more than $100 million to historically Black colleges and universities. So there's so much happening right now where HBCUs are in the spotlight. And of course, I would say the most noteworthy thing is an HBCU graduate being in the White House. Having Vice President Kamala Harris, a graduate of Howard University in Washington, D.C., really elevates the profile of historically Black colleges and institutions.
I'm wondering, you know, during this pandemic, has enrollment fluctuated a lot at historically Black colleges and universities? I mean, we definitely have heard about, you know, the fundraising and the money and everybody trying to do right. You know, I call it Black Lives Matter for real, right? So, but I'm wondering, you know, about enrollment, you know, if there's been a drastic change over the year.
So there are 101 HBCUs. It's hard to paint too broad of a stroke, but there are certainly some institutions that have seen a pretty sharp uptick in enrollment. So North Carolina A&T University, which is the largest historically Black college or university in terms of its enrollment size, they saw record enrollment for fall 2020, as did Edwards Waters College in Florida and Bowie State University in Maryland. So those are just some of the schools that really did see an uptick in enrollment. And I think it is a pretty safe guess that some of this increased enrollment is because of all the racial justice protests we saw over the summer, all the Black men and women that we've seen killed by police. I think it has made a lot of students and their families think twice about what type of campus setting they want, what would be a safe environment or just a safe, you know, academic institution to surround themselves with. And so I think that HBCUs are kind of taking advantage of this moment to make sure that students know, look, if you come to our campuses, there will be lots of people that look like you. Even if they're a police officer or a security guard, they may very much look like you and people in your family. So, you know, you might feel safer here.
But the influx of philanthropic money coming into HBCUs hasn't just been from generous individuals. St. Augustine's is also one of 37 historically Black private schools affiliated with the United Negro College Fund. The organization funds scholarships for Black students and supports schools' financial needs.
HBCUs are, you know, particularly compared to other institutions in higher education, sometimes can be a little bit fragile, but they're in a better position today, even though they still need some additional supports.
Julian Thompson is a strategist for the United Negro College Fund and its Institute for Capacity Building. His job is to improve the resilience and sustainability of these historic institutions.
It's really exciting to number one, to see the national response to the not only the pandemic, but to the killing of George Floyd, and how that awakened a new consciousness in the national imagination, not just about equity and supporting Black communities, but really supporting HBCUs in particular. So seeing that groundswell of support this year has been a really dynamic part of working at the United Negro College Fund and supporting HBCUs. We have an opportunity here to think carefully about the future we want to see, and we're going to take advantage of it.
Is there any major research or surveying underway at UNCF of its member schools during this time as, you know, universities all across the country begin to rebuild and really just try to not, I can't even say try to do things better. They have to do them differently now.
Yeah, for sure. Last summer, we did a student pulse survey to try to get a sense of what our students were thinking about and what concerns were top of mind for them. We had a chance to do a survey of about 5,000 HBCU students, which was, a wonderful opportunity to hear their perspective. One of the things that we ended up learning from that survey is that mental health is going to be something that not only HBCUs, but any institution that's serving minority students in this era is going to have to address. More than a third of the students that we surveyed as a part of that research indicated that their mental health status had declined either significantly or somewhat significantly based on the results of the pandemic. And so we're starting to think very carefully about the way to support those students in a way that maybe hasn't happened before in the HBCU space or in some areas of the Black community. The other thing that we really learned through that survey, and it was really a reaffirmation, is that our students have a lot of responsibility, not only for their academic lives, but for their families and for their communities. And helping students juggle those responsibilities, particularly in an area where they have to do so remotely or do so in an era where there's elevated unemployment, is something that we've really got to think very carefully about to make sure that they're able to continue on their educational journey. HBCUs are oftentimes a central ground for bringing the Black community together, right? And so in this era, we're paying a lot of attention to whether the country is going to respond by engaging HBCUs to be able to solve the most critical challenges we have. An example of that, for instance, is we're starting to think very carefully about HBCUs being used as vaccination sites, right? Or HBCUs being used as testing sites or opportunities to further engage the Black community on questions about the end of this chapter of the pandemic. And so our aspiration there is that HBCUs are seen for what they are, which are well-respected and trusted institutions that have decades of supporting Black communities. I think the country would be well-served by leaning into the strengths of HBCUs in that area as they try to engage the Black community on challenging questions.
Julian Thompson is a strategist for the United Negro College Fund and its Institute for Capacity Building. He is a graduate of UNCF member institution Morehouse College in Atlanta. More in a moment.
Hey, sorry to interrupt your podcast listening. I'll be quick. I'm Lindsay Foster Thomas. I'm the content director at North Carolina Public Radio WUNC. And I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you to everyone who supports WUNC. It makes Tested and all the WUNC podcasts and programs possible. If you haven't yet made a contribution, consider doing so now at WUNC.org. More than half of what it takes to operate WUNC comes from listener support, and your support today is so appreciated. Become a sustainer or increase your monthly gift at WUNC.org. And thanks.
When St. Augustine's University president Irving McPhail died of COVID-19 last October, it was a shock to the education community. Aaliyah Williams, the St. Aug student that called McPhail a father figure, took his passing pretty hard. You know, do you remember where you were when you found out that he passed? You know, I don't know if you were in the cafeteria or you're in class, but where were you and how did that play out, especially as a student leader?
It was actually pretty late. The email got sent out. It was about 9 p.m. So I was just in my bed. I usually am playing my game, and immediately after, I was playing a game with my friends, and I was like, guys, I gotta go. And like, kind of like the world kind of stopped, because I literally just met him, and I knew he was literally about to make an extreme impact on the school. That's why I'm grateful that his wife is here now, because they're basically twins, basically the same person. And I don't know if this is weird, but I see a lot of him in her. And like I said, that his legacy will continue to live on.
That's right. The new president of St. Augustine's University is Christine Johnson McPhail, the widow of Irving McPhail. I recently caught up with McPhail for a socially distant conversation outside on campus to hear more about her loss and the road ahead as the university's new president. So, were you surprised when the university and its board of trustees selected you to be the next president, really following even in your late husband's footsteps?
To be brutally honest, yes. Because I had gone back home to New York, and I was making other plans to walk out the next chapter of my life. I'm honored that they saw in me the opportunity to keep the message alive. And yes, I am surprised to be in this space now, but I'm honored and delighted to be here now in this history of the university and being able to collaborate with the faculty, staff, and students to write this new chapter.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about him and what he was looking forward to, you know, moving to Raleigh and leading this historically Black college.
Yeah, that's an easy one, because he was looking forward to right here, these students right here. He was looking forward to putting his gifts and talents to use at an HBCU. He started his career early as a professor at Morgan State University, and the love for HBCUs and uplifting the African-American community has always been in the forefront of who he is and the work that he did. So what's happening now in terms of us being able to stand here today and talk about him and not get sad is that his message was so much bigger than any one person. His message was about now, but it was also about the future and about who we are as a university and where we can go in the future. And the footprint that he left will be forever, because it's something that we can all walk out in the different roles that we play. So we're not going to lead anybody down a pity party about Dr. Irving Preston McPhail, because if you know who he was, you'd celebrate his message and his ideas about what it's like when you do something with the mind. And that's who he was. That's who he was. That's the message that he left. And I see it living every day when I talk to young people.
You know, how surprising was it, I guess, for you and your family that he had COVID-19 and he passed from that? It seemed very fast, but only you would know that.
I had COVID-19 too. We both had it around the same time. And the fact that I don't know hardly anybody that I know that hasn't had some family member or friend or loved one touched by COVID-19. The one thing that I do get from what happened a year ago in America is that it points to how the human being is vulnerable. It also points to our strengths and how resilient we are. And this disease, this COVID, has impacted the African American community much more than it has other populations. But it also points to the resiliency of our race and how we can collectively work together to find ways to respond to something that so desperately is impacting our community, and point to ways that we can work together to walk this out so that we are better off and that we learn something from this experience. So my family, of course, is every day reminded of our loss. We know the meaning of that empty chair. We know the absence of that beautiful voice of his, you know, saying we can do this, but it's so deeply embedded in our DNA, we can't turn around. Our grandsons talk about their grandfather and what he meant to them and how they can't let him down. And it rings so loud and clear in everything that we do. So we were a purpose-driven family before we lost Dr. Irving Preston McPhail, and we are even more so today.
So I have to ask you, how are you doing health-wise? I mean, you feel healthy and ready for your task, and have you had your vaccine?
Yes. I would not dare walk on this campus and expose these young people to me not having that vaccine. So I'm the poster child for that. And this is very personal to us. And here at St. Aug, we're on a mission. And we know what that mission is. It's about excellence in everything that we do. And about I'm renewed in terms of staying healthy and reminding others to do the same.
That's it for this episode of Test It. Charlie Shelton Orman produced this episode. Lindsay Foster Thomas is our executive producer. I'm Leonita Inge. Thanks for listening.